All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Two Step Down to Texas by Miranda Lambert, Jack Ingram, and John Randall from their collective album, The Martha Tapes. In honor of the Grizzlies, Two Stepping Down to San Antonio specifically for a double dip with the Spurs.
Did you, by the way, have you covered the... of the various playoff series against the Spurs... Were you traveling back in the when they beat the Spurs in was that 2009, 2011? When the hell was that? When the Shane Battier thing, 2011? Yeah, were you at those games? Or were you?
No, I was not an official important sports writer back then. So no one ever sent me to a Grizzlies playoff series until two years ago.
So even the sweep against the what did we have? We had the first sweep. That was in the 4 year. That wasn't one of the first sweeps. Was the
three straight sweeps?
But which one was that? It was the first sweep was San Antonio. Yeah, the first playoff series ever was San Antonio.
Was it Spurs? I can't remember.
Yeah, and then we had the time they beat them, right? And then we had a 6-game series
Spurs
and another
Suns
sweep.
Bass.
What have we had, Chris? Review the Spurs playoff Grizzlies playoff history for me.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to ask me. The first series was the Hubie Brown year, 50-win year. They got swept by the Spurs in that series. And then in 2011, they were the 8-1, beat the Spurs in the first round of that series. And then they played the Spurs in the Western Conference Finals in 2013, where they got swept. And then, was it one or two more times?
There were two more times because they got swept again the Dave Yeager year. They got swept the Dave Yeager year with all the injuries. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was about to say all this. The year that they had all the injuries and people basically just weren't even paying attention at that point other than Dave Yeager crying.
Yeah.
They got swept. And then the Fizdale year, so the last hurrah, they had a 6-game series, and that was when you had the Zebo game, you had the Marc Gasol overtime tip-in, and then you had the big Mike Conley, Kawhi Leonard duel.
Yeah, that was ain't going to rook us. They're not going to rook us. That was that one.
Right.
Yeah. So a colorful history, really, with the Spurs over the years. Spurs are now 500. They are 10th, so they would be in the play-in. Ahead of the Suns, ahead of the Warriors. As you said yesterday, it feels like it's a 12-team race for 10 spots. What do you make of where the Spurs are these days?
Wimby is already probably a top 10 player in the league and, maybe higher than 10, right? And when you have a guy that good, you can play 500 basketball in this league. I don't think the team around him is very good yet. There's a real question for them in the big picture sense of, like, how do you build, a real contending team around him when you're so good now you're not going to have the high draft picks? You can't, get Kawhi Leonard at 14 all the time, You can't depend on that kind of thing happening. So that's a real question. But that guy is, like, fast on his way to being, if not the best player in the world, then, like, one of those top two or three. One of those tippy-top, if you have this guy, now you're really thinking about titles kind of guy. He is that level of talent. The team around them is like it's like guys who are almost done and Chris Paul and guys who are just getting started and Stephon Castle and then a lot of just sort of, nice men kind of guys. So it's not much of a team, but like Wimby is almost a team by himself.
Which of those guys around him, like who do you imagine?
Well, I like Steph Castle, but I think Steph Castle is going to be like the number four guy. I think he's going to be the third or fourth guy on a really good team, right? I don't think he's going to be the second guy.
Yeah, I was going to
say he'll be the third.
Is there anyone else who would be a top who would be starting on a championship level team on this roster?
Devin Mitchell's pretty good. He's another third or fourth kind of guy. So, I could see if they could somehow find an all NBA level. Perimeter, let me have you a point guard, lead ball handler, number one perimeter guy who was an all-star, all-NBA guy, And then, like, you have, like, Stephon Castle, Devin Vassell, Jeremy Sochan, those guys that's, like, third, fourth, fifth, sixth kind of guys. You can have something real fast, but I just don't know how they get that number two guy.
And you wonder if, yes, it's probably inconvenient for them to be this good this year. Like, it's supposed to be a much better draft this year, and maybe, right. I don't know, but does, like, missing, you know, and drafting 11th, does that... Yeah,
I think it would be best for the Spurs to have a top 3-4 pick in this draft, but like sitting Wendy down, there's just no way to do that, you know?
Yeah. All right. So Grizzly Spurs tonight, and then again in these games that are all, they seem to have heightened focus.
But this game, we talked about the franchise history. Let's talk about the right now. This is going to be the first time you get Zach Eadie and Wendy, right. Like two of the real giants in the game
together.
And we saw like the sparks of like when Jog got to go up against Wendy last season. This is only the second time we're going to see that. So
right.
Good stuff.
Jod doesn't dunk on anymore, though. Jod doesn't dunk on at this point. So we're not.
Hey, I'll take a 360 degree layup around Wendy. That'd be cool.
Yeah. No, it'll be fun. How do you guard Wemby?
It's a good question. I mean, you know, your best player to guard him with is Jaren, but that's not really the way they play. Because you want to limit the fouls, and B, you want Jaren to be able to roam and contest instead of being a one-on-one defender. Like, the way they play, like, Jalen Wells, like, guards his guy and ignores everything else.
Right.
And Jaren guards everything else instead of focusing on his guy.
Right, right.
You know, it's sort of like that's sort of the way they like to play. So I think you'll have, you know... You have Eadie and Wemby. Like, that's how you'll start, and you'll get some Jaren, you'll get some Jay Huff, you'll get some Santi Aldama, you'll get some Prayer, you know? I mean, we'll see.
And then you get to see Stephon Castle, who was someone you really liked in the draft. How's he been?
He's been okay. I mean, in the context of this class, he's probably a first-team all-rookie guy.
Right.
But, like, the bar is extremely low. So he's a guy who's a good defender, a good passer. He's scoring a little bit. The shooting percentages aren't great. He's been one of the better rookies. But again, the bar is extremely low with this class. He's maybe been the fourth or fifth best rookie. And he hasn't, but that means he's averaging 10 points a game.
The last ranking I saw, where was it? It was Vassini, I think. I had the Grizzlies still 1-2 in this class.
Yeah.
And that's with Zach Eadie, you know, coming off a rough stretch. I think he's been surpassed by Jalen Wells in his ranking. I think he flipped him, which makes all the sense in the world, honestly, right now.
Yep.
So we also have G.G. Jackson making his return to the G League tonight. That's promising.
Have they officially said he's playing in the game? I know they assigned him, so I assume he's playing in the game, but I don't know if they've officially said he's playing in the game.
Yeah, I don't know that. Maybe I'm assuming he's playing in the game.
They have to assign those guys for the practice if they're going to practice with the hustle. I don't know if they've officially said he's playing, but I suspect he probably will.
So let's assume he plays tonight. What do you think about that as a path back for GG?
I see that, and reluctantly, I have looked at the Elon Musk hellscape, but
I only heard about it from Jeffrey this morning. I didn't realize this was a controversy of whether it was bad to send him to the G League.
But my reaction, to me, this is a prime example of not everything is something you have to have a strong opinion about or be mad about. Like, Drew asked him about this on the pod, and I was like, it's fine. It's fine if he plays some games with the hustle. It's also fine if he doesn't play some games with the hustle.
Right.
Like, either approach is entirely reasonable and defensible. Now, if he plays 3 weeks worth of games with the hustle and is playing well and he's still with the hustle, right. I would raise an objection to that. But if he plays 4 or 3 games with the hustle to, like, get his rhythm and so he can play, like, 30 minutes and try to, like, you know, get his cardio back, I don't see why that
Isn't
would
that
be a problem.
Probably what it's for? I don't understand. Unless there's
but
some
the
indignity.
Time, I don't think it's mandatory.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also don't think it's mandatory to do that. If they did the other way and they said he's going to just beat the Grizzlies and he might play and he might not, but he's active with us, that'd be fine, too. It's all fine.
It's all
not
fine.
Not everything's a big deal.
So how much... obviously, even heading into this year, we wondered, what's it going to be like with GG? What's his role going to be here? Last year, he put up he looked great in empty calories. Like, never, he got to be the focus of the offense when he was playing, puts up lots of shots, so he wasn't playing meaningful minutes and meaningful games. Now he's going to play a a smaller minutes and a smaller different role when he's on the court. And by the way, these other players are now, at least ostensibly, were going to be healthy. So where was he going to fit in the rotation before? And now, honestly, we've seen Jalen Wells take a step. We've seen Jake LaRavia take a step. What did you think coming into the year, and what do you think now?
Well, GG had a strong summer league. He had a bad first game, and then it really came on. He had a strong summer league, and I think he was in position to be in the rotation if he had not had the injury. As far as now, I mean, it's kind of an odd thing because there's such a huge difference between the level of his talent and the level of his age experience. Like, there's such a gap between those two things, and that gap is sort of magnified. I'm sort of using words here, but it's sort of magnified by the absence and the time he's been off. So I think the range of possible for him now this season is extremely wide. If you told me on April 1st, you're going to look up and GG Jackson's the fourth best player on this team, I'd say, you know what? That could happen. If you told me you'll look up on April 1st and GG Jackson's the 14th guy and he's not really playing, I'd say, you know what? That could happen. Like, it really could go any number of ways this season. I think going beyond this season, he's going to be a significant player on the team. But for the rest of this season, like, the range of possible is all over the place.
That's kind of fun. It's kind of fun. And it is one of the things that it would be nice to get some data on, some information on, before you head into the trade deadline.
I do think that he should, in relatively swift order, they should start getting him some minutes. I don't think it should be a thing where, like, he sets. It's one thing if, like, he ends up not in the rotation, but I think there should be an opportunity for him to break into the rotation. I totally think that.
In terms of two separate questions, one is Marcus Smart, Vince Williams, GG are the injured three at this point, and they're making their way back. I want to ask you, who do you have most stock in terms of how they will help this year? What's your ranking? And who do you have put the most stock in terms of who's most important to the Grizzlies' future going forward? Two separate rankings there.
Well, Marcus Smart, to me, is not the answer to either of those questions.
Certainly not the second, right.
Unless they play the Rockets.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, he could be the answer to the first question. That's very possible. That was the idea. But he is not my answer today to the first question. My answer today to the first question is Vince Williams Jr. I just think, and this is a gamble because he hasn't played that much either. He's older than GG Jackson, several years older. But he also hasn't played that much, and he's had the injury. And so, like, do you believe in what you saw last year or not? I watched all the games. I do believe in it. I think Vince Williams is going to be, assuming he's healthy, a significant part of the Grizzlies' rotation down the stretch and in the playoffs. It wouldn't surprise me if he was starting by the time he got to the playoffs. So Vince is my answer to the first question. And it could be Vince on the second one, too, just because if he ends up being an elite, like, 3-and-D wing kind of guy, like their Herb Jones kind of player, like, he could be the starter long-term on the team, so he could be the answer. But GG's the talent. GG's the biggest talent. So I think the answer to the second, I'm still going to say, is GG.
Cam Johnson's trade stuff still kicking around. Yeah, who knows? Whatever's going to happen. In terms of what you might have to give up for him, how reluctant would you be to give up either Vince Williams Jr. or GG Jackson as part of a package for Cam Johnson?
I don't think I would give up either of those guys in a Cam Johnson trade. I think the hurdles to Cam Johnson are not as high as the hurdles to a Jimmy Butler deal, but I think they're still pretty high, in part because we've already seen like the Nets turn down a Grizzlies trade offer, right? And we know that the Nets aren't that interested in the Grizzlies' 2025 first-round pick because they already have four picks in the 2025 draft. So now, in terms of value, A, just to match contracts, you're giving up Marcus Smart, which maybe there are fans who would welcome that. I don't think the Grizzlies would quite welcome it. So from the Grizzlies' standpoint, that would be giving up something you care about. And the Nets' standpoint, it would just be matching contracts on a guy who has another year left.
There's no value there. You're not giving up. Well, they still haven't gotten the good
value
stuff.
It subtracts value, theoretically, from a Grizzlies' perspective without adding value from a Nets' perspective.
Right.
And that's a problem. And so now you're having to add more value, not only to match the Cam Johnson value, but to make up for the Marcus Smart contract they don't want, right? And they don't want your 2025 pick, which is the one you want to trade, probably. So now you're talking about multiple picks in the future, which I think the Grizzlies are reluctant to do because it ties up what you can do after that. And then you may be talking about a player, a young player on a good contract, and maybe that's Gigi Jackson, maybe that's Vince Williams, maybe it's Jalen Wells, maybe it's Santi Aldama. So I think you're talking about a pretty considerable cost. Maybe that cost is worth it. I'm not trying to argue that it's not. I'm just trying to let people know, like, it is that complicated. And then there's the trickle-down effects of, like, what did the Grizzlies think about Santi Aldama, who's somewhat similar positionally to Cam Johnson. He is younger, he is bigger, he has less of an injury history. He is a restricted free agent this summer. If you have Cam Johnson on a $27 million contract for two more years after this, does that basically preclude bringing back Santi Aldama?
Right.
And maybe your answer is that's fine.
Yeah.
That might be the right answer. But that is something the Grizzlies would have to think about.
But to sum up for the folks, and this is why I've been reluctant. To sum up, you're talking about Marcus Smart for money reasons you'd be giving up. You'd then be talking about multiple firsts in the future and maybe a young player like Gigi and or Vince Williams or whatever.
I suspect two items from the bucket.
Two items from the bucket.
Those buckets include future, not 2025, but future first round picks and good young players. And I don't think you're necessarily talking about three things from the bucket. You're talking about a couple.
Two of those three things for the bucket, a future first and Gigi or two firsts or whatever else. And the other cost is might well ultimately cost you Santi Aldama in terms of being a part of the future because of future contractual obligations. So
let me be clear because these things get distorted. This is educated guesswork. This 100%. Is me understanding all the factors at play. This is not reporting. I don't know what, if anything, the Grizzlies have offered or the Nets have asked for.
But that's the kind of thing that they might be thinking about. And so if you're thinking about this deal realistically, and what does it do? It gets you a player who is terrific shooter, deeply playoff experience, would be useful on this team. But honestly, if you're looking at what ailed them against the Rockets, doesn't address that. You know, doesn't, he's not.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I do think it's a debatable situation. If you told me you could do Marcus Smart, Jake LaRavia in the 2025 first unprotected for Cam Johnson, I'd do that trade, right?
Of course.
But you get into the other stuff, it becomes much more, again, debatable. It's not like something you would absolutely not do. People, reasonable people, can have different answers to that, but it is not as clear cut.
Yeah. Okay. You've written about what's up in film in Memphis this week, and I wanted to touch on that. I retweeted the piece already, and you say it's a good week for Memphians at the movie theater, in particular three movies that you highlight, one of which we've talked about before, Nickel Boys. Right. Nickel Boys is what and where?
I think it's at,
let me see.
I don't remember.
Malco Theater's Ridgeway Cinema Grill. It's at
Ridgeway. It's at Ridgeway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was the opening night movie at Indie Memphis this year. It is an adaptation of a Pulitzer winning novel by Colson Whitehead about Jim Crow era Florida reform school and two teenage boys who get sent there. It was my number three movie of the year. It's beautifully shot. And it's constructed in a way that is very unusual. And so that may be a hurdle for some people. It's getting lots of awards from various critics groups. You know, I don't think it's going to be a big box office thing. You'll probably get nominated for Best Picture, but it's not going to win it. But I think it's one of the better movies of the year.
Okay. At Malco's Studio on the Square, Sing Sing.
Sing Sing is a movie I think a lot of people would really like. I would highly recommend people going to see it. To me, it's not the same movie, but in broad terms, in terms of like how it works and the quality of it, it reminds me a little bit of that movie Coda that actually won Best Picture a few years ago. It's, you know, it's based on a true story. It's sort of an inspiring true story thing. It's very well crafted. It's really affecting without being overly manipulative. Like, it's really good, and it's about a rehabilitation through the arts program, prison program, where inmates, you know, do theatrical performances as part of their rehabilitation. And it's based on that real program. And a lot of the performers in the movie are people essentially playing themselves who came through that program. It's very, very good.
I like this graph. We often say that a film isn't for all tastes. This is true of most things, of course. It's undoubtedly true of Nickel Boys. But I can't imagine many film goers of any kind would regret checking out Sing Sing. And then finally, Hard Truths.
Hard Truths was, I think, my number five movie on my year-end list. It's a British film by this director, Mike Lee, who's probably my favorite living filmmaker. This is the movie of his that's gotten the most attention, really, probably more than 10 years. And it's a drama, so you know, a family drama, and about a woman who just is unhappy. It's like he made a movie 10 years ago called Happy Go Lucky, starring Sally Hawkins, which was about a movie about a woman who was dispositionally happy, was happy all the time, even when bad things happened, and just about how she went through life. But when you just sort of have that kind of disposition, this is sort of the other side of the coin. It's about a woman who's just unhappy.
Oh, God.
And how that unhappiness affects her, affects the people around her. It's funny sometimes. It's really, like, you know, tough sometimes. It's just, there's a real richness to the way he crafts movies that I think is really, really pops. The lead actress here, Marianne Jean-Baptiste, won Best Actress from the National Film Critics Group, from the New York Film Critics Circle, from all these critics groups. She should get an Oscar nomination, but who knows?
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. He does a roundup of what's in the theaters every week over at the Daily Memphian. Just another reason to subscribe. We got Sam Hardiman coming up next about what's happening in the city. Before that, I will tell you, if you're selling your house, call Josh Issa. That's simple. 2025, maybe this is the year. You're going to upgrade. You're going to move to a different part of town. Whatever it is, it's Josh Hysaw and his team at Keller Williams Realty can help you through that process. 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. It can be tricky. You know, you find your dream home, but like you want to sell your own home like first. Most of us don't have money to have two houses. Well, James was dealing with this issue. He goes to Josh Hysaw. Josh Hysaw puts his house on the market within 3 days, had an offer that was honestly more than he thought he'd get, and enabled him to go ahead and make the move into his dream home. That's the kind of thing that can happen when you call Josh Hysaw. Phone number is 901-461-8147. JoshHasTheBuyers.com. When we return, Sam Hardiman joins the program. It is Jeff Gawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Gawkins Show. Joined now by Sam Hardiman, who writes for the Daily Memphian. Covers the city for the Daily Memphian. Lives downtown, by the way. And so before we get to anything else, Sam, we did have this, you know, this turn of bad weather over the past week. And it seems as if things went relatively smoothly. Is that your perception?
I mean, yes. I mean, as a New Englander, I sort of reject the term that the snow is bad weather, but accepting the premise that this was bad weather, faulty as it may be, yeah, and let's knock on wood here. We have some Arctic temperatures that are coming into Memphis next week and in the broader eastern United States, so I wouldn't say, like, Memphis's, you know, annual bout with winter, as I would describe it, is quite over yet. But this has been, from an infrastructure perspective, from an availability of power perspective, certainly a breath of fresh air. I mean, I would just ask, I mean, it seems like the public is far less angsty about what transpired on Friday than they typically are when we get frozen precipitation in the aftermath of frozen precipitation. That's what I would say. We're not out of the woods yet. We're going to have really cold temperatures next week. Some pipes could freeze. That could impact water pressure. If water pressure falls below 20 PSI on your faucet, then MLG&W is going to have to call a boil water advisory. Hopefully everyone's pipes don't freeze early part of next week.
That's what I was. So how much of our good fortune, we didn't have the boil water advisory, that's, as you point out, that's largely a product of the temperatures. How much, though, do you think, and we've heard a lot from MLG&W about, you know, the changes that they've made, that we heard a lot about, and I've seen it in my own neighborhood, the trees getting cut back, right? Like, it feels like there's been a much more aggressive approach there. Do we get the sense that last week's relatively uneventful time of it was purely the product of the fact that the weather wasn't so bad? It was also because people were doing a good, had been doing a good job.
I think you have to attribute it to both, right? Like, the weather wasn't terrible. It wasn't, the winds did not blow at a high rate of speed, right? The snow came down entirely as snow, not as a mixture of snow and ice. Like, those are all things that, like, no utility company can control, right? However, like, to your point, like, these dilapidated right-of-ways that we've had throughout the city, I'd never seen such dilapidated right-of-ways until I moved to Memphis, Tennessee in 2018, where you have these, like, leaning over power lines into houses that are overgrown with vegetation. Well, in snowstorms, when snow weighs down trees, that vegetation would then fall into power lines, right, if it wasn't trimmed, and then it knocks out power piece by piece, and there can be cascading effects here, because not all one line, sometimes it's not just the line that goes to a house, but it's the distribution line that goes to an entire neighborhood, right? And so the more trees that have been trimmed, the less likely that weighed down power lines from snow are going to cause power outages. So all of those things are good, right? So those two things work together, right? We had relatively mild winter weather and, you know, actually trimming the trees and spending ratepayer dollars on trimming the trees seems to work out.
Okay. The other thing I want to talk to you about in particular is we've got the start of the state legislative session, right? That's begun this week. Sometimes, like, not a lot of sports shows like to talk about the state legislative session, but we do here. And then, of course, last year we had all of this focus on, was it just last year? Would they get the money?
Yeah, it was last year and the year before. We had two straight legislative sessions.
Yeah. So from the sports perspective, we're like, how much money are they going to get? Are they going to get the money? Whatever. It doesn't seem like there's as much necessarily at stake from a sports perspective this year. But what as you look ahead, first of all, how long, give us the rundown. How long does the legislative session work and last? And what is Memphis interested in? Do you have a sense of what the big stories will be that might come out of this legislative session?
Yeah, so I'll take the easy parts. First, the legislative session began yesterday. There'll be a special session as well as a regular session at this time. And those are going to run, I think, concurrently, but we won't get into the differences between those probably. But it should end towards the end of, I think our doorbell's going off at the Daily Memphian here. It should end in the middle of April, maybe late April, early May. That's like historically been the average. And so from a Memphis perspective, right, like one of the things that's really, that feature, you wrote about it a little bit in your column this morning, Jeff, about the school board, is this uneven power dynamic between the greater Memphis region, the city of Memphis, the municipality, and the Tennessee General Assembly, right? And state law supersedes local law in almost all cases, okay? And so the state General Assembly, House Speaker Cameron Sexton, State Senator Brent Taylor, who's a Memphis representative, they have all shown a keen interest in Memphis affairs recently in terms of, you know, Senator Brent Taylor is talking about ousting District Attorney Steve Mola, who was a duly elected district attorney, okay? Cameron Sexton, the House Speaker, has threatened to take away sales tax revenue from the city of Memphis. That doesn't appear like it's going to happen. Then there's the idea that if Marie Fagan is, you know, deposed from the superintendent's chair at MFCS, the school board could all of a sudden have state-appointed members on it or, you know, some sort of action in that regard. So the big storyline from a Memphis perspective is what form does the state of Tennessee's reaching into Memphis and asserting its power, right?
Right.
That is going to be the open question. How is that power going to be asserted? It will be asserted some way. We just don't know how yet.
Is there a, you know, big ask, something? Are we asking for a big line item, power, you know, money for the state for something? And in particular, is there, you know, we hear about the Grizzlies and the lease thing is still, you know, they haven't reached an agreement on the lease with the Grizzlies and the city. Is there more money going to be headed this way for public safety?
I would imagine that there would be some sort of interest from the city of Memphis in state dollars or state resources or access to dollars, right? Because the state can also grant access to, you know, its credit rating, for example, for bonds and stuff like that. I'm not saying that could happen, but they're just access to money in general for public safety and public safety in the broader city, but particularly in the area around FedEx North, right? Just making that place a little bit more of a fortress. I think there's interest from the city in that. There's interest from the NBA franchise in that. We will see what form that takes. In terms of the actual money for the public dollars going into the renovation of the arena, we're probably at what we need in terms of locally here. Like, the whatever the other contributions are going to be, there's $550+ million essentially ready for broad-scale renovations for FedEx Forum, and there is already being work underway. You know, pieces that were done this offseason, the rigging and the sound system already been replaced, stuff like that can be done already, and it's really just a matter of what is the area around the arena going to look like long-term, as we've discussed before.
Talking to Sam Hardiman on Twitter or X, at Sam Hardiman, read his stuff over at the Daily Memphian. You wrote a piece about MATA. That's one of the dramas that emerged last year. 1 month of expenses left, then it's out of cash. Well, that sounds like a lot of us, Sam, really, you know. sounds like America right there. What's the situation? That doesn't sound good.
It's not great. You're right, Jeff. We as Americans probably spend a little too much and don't have enough emergency expenses. Please, everyone, consider that. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not a financial advisor. Anyway, the Memphis Area Transit Authority is really only subsisting on a $30 million grant from the city of Memphis. It receives other funds from the state of Tennessee, from the Federal Transportation Administration, the federal government. It hasn't been really spending those funds on its operations. It really due to concern about what are the restrictions on those funds, and has it spent those funds properly in the past? The city of Memphis just recently moved to hire a forensic accounting firm, the accounting giant PricewaterhouseCoopers, to go over MATA's books. And so really what is happening right now, and Memphis Mayor Paul Young has said that he would get MATA to about early February, which early February is about 20 days away, right? Get MATA to early February before, you know, it would have to make further cuts to its routes. That time is ticking, and it really remains to be seen. If MATA is going to run out of cash, the city of Memphis, unless MATA is just going to go down to nothing, the city of Memphis is probably going to have to allocate some money to MATA. And so is there support? Memphis Mayor Paul Young can bring that to the city council. It's a matter of, is the Memphis City Council going to say, oh, yeah, sure, there's room in the city budget, which is quite tight, to give MATA more cash? And that's going to be a really open-ended conversation.
Last thing, Sam. You got a football coach now. Mike Vrabel has formally signed on as the coach of your New England Patriots. How are you feeling about this?
I feel well about it. it seems good. I'm not really ready for Josh McDaniels, like 3.0 or 4.0, whatever stop it is. I'm not ready for that. No, like I'm ready to not have Josh McDaniels in my life. He's been out of my life for a little bit. I'm good for him not to be in it. I'm happy. I was really happy about how Mike Vrabel didn't talk about the dynasty. He did not look backward. He wasn't like trying to bask in the glow of when he caught, 10 touchdown passes from Tom Brady. It was much more about how are we going to build a culture and how are we going to have a good football team. And, when your team has gone like 8-26 the past few years, those are good things to hear.
Sam, thanks very much. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Sam Hardiman from the Daily Memphian. I was reading a piece recently, Jeffrey, apropos of all that, that we talked about this a little bit earlier. If you look at the teams that had great offenses this year, they weren't teams that had a wizard as the head coach. They were teams that had Dan Campbell as the head coach. They were teams that had, who had the best offenses this year? The Bills had a great offense, right? Okay. Not a wizard. The Ravens had a great offense. Head coach, not a wizard.
But they all have guys. Their offensive coordinators are all highly thought of.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
But we talked about Bills, head coach culture so building. You know who else? Bucks. Bucks had a great offense this year with what?
Baker.
Yes. But again, a defensive coach.
Correct.
Lions. The coaches, you don't need to go hire a head coach who is an offensive wizard. You need a Joe Brady on your staff. You need a gifted offensive coordinator on your staff. But the idea of head coach as culture builder seems to be able to produce not only good offenses, but the best offenses in the league.
I think the argument against it would be, and I'm in agreement with you, because I think we've abandoned culture guys way too quickly. The argument against it would be, if you have a great offensive mind, you don't have to replace great offensive mind if he's the head coach.
I agree with that.
So, like, I think what will be interesting for the Lions, they don't have to worry about it until next year, but they're probably going to have to replace both coordinators. And that's oftentimes when you see culture guys struggle after having success, usually it occurs when they have to replenish a staff.
Yeah, I can see that as being a challenge. We got to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. Just to follow up on what we were saying, Jeffrey has now done the research.
Yes, I have, Jeff.
And?
You were 100% correct. The top five scoring offenses in the NFL this season, not a single one had a play-calling head coach. You have to go down to the Bengals at six to get a...
And the top five were?
The top five were the Lions, Ravens, Bucks, Commanders,
Bills.
Sorry.
Yeah. So there you go. You don't need, there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Yes.
Or to advance the pigskin down the field. A couple things. Other things I want. Grizzlies tonight, obviously, you got Grizzlies Spurs. We'll be talking about that tomorrow. See the International Olympic Committee, Gary Hall. Do you remember Gary Hall? He's a swimmer. Won 10 Olympic medals.
I do not.
I covered some of them, I think, towards the end. 10 Olympic medals, they were all melted.
Oh, that's terrible.
In the fire. Well, among the things that are lost, it pales in comparison to many of the things that are lost, including lives. But the IOC is going to give him a reissue medals for Gary Hall, so that seems appropriate, right? There's also, by the way, if you spend your life on TikTok, good news, Ed Markey, who's a Democratic senator from Massachusetts, he has introduced the Extend the TikTok Deadline Act, which maybe you would guess this from the title, extends the TikTok deadline.
Ah.
And what it does is gives them another 270 days before TikTok would go away. In the meantime, there's evidently a Chinese app that's kind of
one last fix.
That's kind of like TikTok. It's called Red Note. And so all these people who hate that TikTok is being taken away, out of spite, they've joined and downloaded the app Red Note, which is literally a Chinese app. And they've basically going on TikTok and saying, hey, Chinese spies, take all my data. Wouldn't it be funny if our response to TikTok going away is all of America joins Red Note?
Well, I don't know if you saw this. The outgoing FBI director was on 60 Minutes this weekend, and he was like very adamant. The number one threat to Americans is China.
Yeah, we don't take anything seriously anymore. Let's be honest. We take
ourselves.
Nothing
well, serious. Ourselves.
We do take ourselves seriously. I may not be much, but I'm all I think
correct.
About. Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming next with Jason and John. Jason will be joined by Coach Hurd today. Joining me on Jeffrey Wright and Company will be Kevin Cerrito. CJ Hurd's going to join us during hour number two. Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow. For now, work is done.